This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, and much more. Joining us today is Professor Darrell van Groenen, who leads a research engagement and innovation group at the Nelson Mandela University, specifically the Center for Community Technologies, or CCT. The CCT integrates transdisciplinary research and innovation with community engagement through the development and implementation of apps and other smart technologies that enable the development of education, health, rural and social development, especially in low-income communities. And this year, the CCT received the Science Diplomacy for Africa Award. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Amalia, for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here today.
Your world sounds fascinating, and I imagine that no 2 days are the same. But tracking back, can you tell us a little more about your personal and academic journey and what inspired you to pursue information technology?
So without sounding like a typical academic, I will try to be a bit more succinct and on point in terms of my journey. But I think it would be good to go back probably to about 1990, where my journey in information technology began. It had its origin in education. I was teaching at Itembelihle Comprehensive School in New Brighton in the then Port Elizabeth, now known as Babega. And I realized that if learning was truly to become part of South Africa's democratic journey, it needed to embrace technology as well. And at the time, resources were very scarce, but potential was always immense in the space that I was in. So I introduced the school's first computer literacy classes. I launched a school newspaper and started a drama group all at once. You know, one small step towards empowering the learners through their creativity and innovation. And being a linguist, a multilingual person, I speak a number of languages, I then looked back at my own history. Up until then, I majored in languages and also completed a higher diploma in education. But my curiosity was piqued by technology. I come from an era where there wasn't technology in school. And that led me to pursue some postgraduate studies in computer-aided learning, distance learning, but then also in usability. And these studies really deepened my understanding of how people interact with technology, and also to think about how technology, digital tools, could be designed to serve human needs more effectively. So from there, I transitioned from the schooling environment to SAP Research, the German company, where I was one of four global user experience leads. And there I became very familiar with the stark divide between those who design technology and those who have access to it. You know, it doesn't mean because you design it that you understand how you need to use it. So the experience of that shaped my belief that technology must really be inclusive, relevant, and grounded in the human context. And then from there, I joined Nelson Mandela University, and in 2014, I established the Center for Community Technologies. And as they say, you know, the rest is history from there onwards.
Thinking about what you've just tracked through and doing some mental maths, I mean, the 1990s, there wasn't any kind of tech. I don't even think I had an email address. I don't think the internet was, it certainly wasn't what it is today. So it was very pioneering.
So yes, there was Very, very little technology. I remember, at the school, everybody used to do their handwritten mark schedules and so forth. And I thought, no, guys, really, there must be a different way that we can do this. In those days, the school size was also quite significant. Schools were much bigger than what they are today. At the given time, the school that I was at, I think we had 2,700 learners.
Wow.
So you can imagine, I was teaching English for grade 12s or matric in those days. And you had some 800 scripts to mark, and if you're teaching a language, it's 800 times three. So then once you've marked all of those, you had to capture the marks and do the calculations and all of that. So in those days, we started with the very first computers where we still had the floppy disks and the small disks and so forth. There were no USB drives and the likes thereof. So very, very different times, and of course less sophisticated software than what we have now. But it was quite different and but very interesting for staff and the students alike at the time, because it was something completely new.
So it is, and it's changing all the time. And now, with the advent of AI, it's primed to change even further. But before we start going down that road, I wanted to quote you. Where you said the Centre of Community Technologies work is focused on the development of human potential and well-being, particularly in disadvantaged, vulnerable, and deep rural communities. Our tool towards achieving this is needs-driven smart technology. Please tell us about the centre's co-creation model with different communities.
Again, something very, very close to my heart. Because when we say our work at the center is needs driven, it's not just a phrase, it's not just something that we say, it's a foundation of everything that we do. We don't design solutions in isolation and then take them to the communities. We truly work with the communities from the very beginning. So when they have their very first thought about something, that's when we start on the journey. So co-creation for us means that people are part of the process, not just as a participant, but as a true partner in that whole process. So before we develop anything, we spend time on the ground listening, observing, and learning from people, because we need to understand what their daily life looks like, what challenges people face, and what already works well. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Perhaps we just need to be a catalyst for something. So it's only by seeing the world through their eyes that we can create technology that genuinely fits their needs and circumstances. So once we have that understanding, and that's sometimes a lengthy process, we start building, but building together. And the community members help shape the design, the language, and even the look and feel of our solutions. At the end of the day, it's actually their solution, not ours. So they test the prototypes, they give feedback, they help us refine the technology until they're comfortable that it feels natural and useful to them. So when you start seeing the real ownership, when they don't talk about your technology, but our technology. And that's a really exciting process, because it builds the confidence and the skills level, but it also just onboards people from the very beginning. So we don't have to just go in and say, okay, please, will you do this? Will you do that? People are part and parcel of the process. So in many cases, they become the champions in their own communities because they are busy with this. And they help others to learn and to use the tools that they've created together. So to me, that is the true power of co-creation. It's not just designing an app or a solution. It's designing with the people, for the people, in a way that is meaningful to them.
I'd imagine it'd be so rewarding. And it also goes back to what you said from your previous work in terms of designing that user experience, because if you don't have that dynamic, people aren't going to use it.
Absolutely. The bottom line is in the space of user experience and usability, if the user can't use it, it does not work. To quote a friend of mine who's been in usability for more than 40 years. And that is truly the case. If there's not a good experience, and we speak about the evolution of technology, what we need to remember is that there are thousands and thousands of solutions out there. So if this particular solution that I'm using is not working for me, the next one is just a click away or a download away. So it's important that you ensure that what you create is truly usable and creates a very positive, engaging user experience.
You've been in this field for a very long time. You've developed a number of different applications and website across diverse sectors. Can you tell us about a particular project that you are proud of and how this has made a difference in a community?
That's quite a tall order, and it's difficult to choose just one project because just about every project carries a story of people whose lives have been changed in small but meaningful ways. But perhaps one that I could single out is the school health project, which cuts across different areas. It's a story very, very close to my heart. The school health assessment tool we developed quite a few years ago. It was developed to support school nurses and health practitioners in underserved areas. So essentially in very rural areas in South Africa, in the Eastern Cape province. So when we started, many of the school nurses, or most of the school nurses, were using paper-based forms to record health screenings. So you can imagine hundreds of of pages per school, with no easy way to track and analyze data. Now, bearing in mind this was also pre-COVID, before we understood what data could do for us. So we spent time with the nurses in the field and watching how they work, understanding what slowed them down, what are their pain points, and also listening to what it is that they needed. And out of these conversations came a simple but wonderful idea of a mobile application that could digitize all those processes. And when we were at school, we had these school nurses that came round to the school, and I can remember them sitting with their files and capturing your data and so forth. So we then created this mobile application that allows them to capture the health data, but then also to share it with the Department of Health or the Department of Education. So what this app now allows is for nurses to create an electronic health record profile for each learner, including their hearing, their vision, the dental and growth assessments. It even integrates some of the WHO growth charts, and it uses store and forward technology. So if they in a place where there's no connectivity, it stores it on the device, and then when they have connectivity, it automatically uploads it to a central repository. And why this is so particularly special is that there's a story that stays with me from a nurse in one of the very rural areas of Klopfenwaber in the rural Eastern Cape. She identified a young learner with a serious hearing problem that had gone unnoticed for many, many years. But because the app prompted her to record and review the data immediately, she was able to refer this learner for treatment on that same day. And for the first time in forever, this person then could actually hear what was happening in the classroom. Now, how often do we hear those stories of
Giving
people
goosebumps.
sitting? Yeah, learners sitting in the classroom and they're not able to hear or see. So this just triggered something that had a knock-on effect, and I suppose the bottom line of this is that moments like that remind me of why we do this work. It's not a about technology for its own sake, but it's about the people as well, about making sure that every child, no matter where they live or you know where they are, has the same opportunity to learn, to grow, and thrive in their environment. So I guess, you know, if I had to say that, that's the heartbeat of the work that we do at the CCT. It's using technology to bridge to equity and to ensure that innovation not only has a technology face, but a human face as well.
Such a brilliant project. And as you said, it is multifaceted. There is the health dynamic that is enabling nurses to do their job more easily. And I'm sure that there is a tremendous opportunity for scalability, not just within the South African context, but also within the continent. And then the other key element is the outcomes of learners, as you just shared, of someone who couldn't hear and was able to get immediate attention, and thinking about this from an equity point of view, and then thinking about this from an education perspective of equal access to opportunities and not being held back. Last year, we spoke to Mia LaRue, the Miss SA, and she said exactly what you were saying, how you were lost. If you couldn't hear, if you couldn't be part of mainstream, sorry for you, you were forgotten.
Yeah. No, and you know, that's just the power of technology when used in the correct manner. And I think that's something that we often lose out of sight. People think that we just use technology for the sake of technology. But when you truly apply your mind to the challenge or the obstacle to see how technology can be used in a good way, you know, to support people, it opens up a completely new world.
And one of your other mottos or quotes that I absolutely love is ICT solutions for Africa, by Africans, in Africa. And I know that you've just recently received a delegation from Malawi. Can you tell us a little about what they saw, what they experienced, and what they hope to learn and take away?
So incidentally, this was a focus of their sessions and questions to me as well, is that they were captured by this solution for Africa by Africans in Africa. And to me, it's a statement of intent. I'm a very proudly African, and anybody that gives me half an opportunity to share that with them will hear that as well. So why we do that, it reminds us that context matters and that technology designed elsewhere can't simply be copied and pasted into our African realities. The way people live, the way we work, and access to information on this continent is unique. So are the challenges, of course. But when talking to like colleagues from Malawi, you know, we realize that there are so many similarities, from intermittent connectivity, limited infrastructure, to the linguistic diversity of the population, the cultural nuances, all of that. So that's why you can't just copy and paste solutions from elsewhere and think it's just going to work, you know. So when we design technology at the CCT, we start from that understanding. That's always our point of departure. So when we work in rural areas, for example, where internet access is unreliable, our solutions need to function offline and synchronize data at a later stage when connectivity is established. We also design the interfaces that are visual and intuitive, because you have to deal with different digital literacy levels, not only literacy levels, but digital literacy levels. And not everybody who uses technology is fluent in English. So we don't necessarily develop everything and translate every component of an interface, but we look at what would be contextually relevant in that particular area. So if I were to say I can't just translate an interface into isiXhosa that's being used here in the urban area, because the isiXhosa being used in the rural area is different, you know. So we try and use free translation using voice rather than words, because it makes it more accessible. But I think the relevance of this is also important, because it goes beyond language and connectivity. It's about respect. We need to respect how people do things, and not impose a Western way of doing things. So the aim is not to get people to change their behavior to use a tool. The tool needs to adapt to the behavior of the people. So that to me is part of the In Africa for Africa by Africans. So on the human side, we also invest a lot of time in people and mentorship, training, so that they can eventually extend the solutions themselves, because this is not about us. It's about empowering the people, truly empowering them. So we design for inclusion of real people, not just, you know, make-believe people. The tool must be able to work in deep rural Eastern Cape, or in an urban Johannesburg or Cape Town or whatever. So we know that we've done our job well when it works in both those settings. So I think also part of that motto of ours is not so much about sophistication. It's about fitting the context of where we want to use it. So giving people the confidence and the capability to use the digital innovation in a manner that it was intended for, not just because it's something that is available. So I have to also say that I'm extremely passionate about doing things on our continent. For me, Africa does not need to import innovations or solutions. We need to empower our innovators. We have the talent, we have the creativity, we have the resilience. We're very, very resilient on this continent and within our communities. So as a researcher, as a technologist, I think it is our responsibility to create opportunities to allow people to flourish.
And now I understand why you were awarded the 2025 Science Diplomacy for Africa Award. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Prof, thinking about everything that you've said, and because we're a gender-based show, I wanted to ask you about, from your perspective, what are some of the greatest opportunities that are currently available to women who are going into an ICT or engineering field, both in South Africa and also into the continent?
So I think we're in a very exciting time for women entering ICT and engineering fields across the continent. I don't like to think, you know, narrowly about South Africa. I like to think about the continent. So for the first time, there's not only an awareness of the gender gap, but there's also a momentum to actually close that gap. The world has started to recognize the diversity, and that it's not just a moral imperative that people are now upholding. It's an innovation advantage. When you ask women to participate, they give it their all. They participate fully, and they immerse themselves in technology and engineering. The kinds of questions that women ask, the solutions that we design, become far richer, more inclusive, and more relevant to society. And that's part of being a woman. It's not necessarily just being an engineer or a scientist. And I think in Africa specifically, the opportunities are immense, because we're still shaping so much of the digital landscape. So we have a clean slate here. We're not bound by the legacy systems or old models. And we're also very good at leapfrogging into new situations. So we really have the freedom to design what inclusivity looks like from the ground up for women. And women have the chance, you know, to lead the creation of technologies that address the issues that they understand intimately. There are things like maternal health, community safety, financial inclusion, education. I mean, we can't talk about education enough. So there's power in bringing that lived experience into the innovation spaces. But also at the same time, we need to be honest, you know, there are still structural barriers that come into play occasionally, access to funding, mentorship, and the networks remain still uneven. It takes a long time to get into that space. And there's still a pipeline gap from school to university to industry where we often lose the young woman along the way. But I believe that's also where universities, government, and funding bodies can make a difference, is to offer intentional mentorship and intentional leadership programs for women. Not token gestures, because that's my pet hate in life. Don't do something as a token. Create a sustainable ecosystem that will link students into the ecosystem from the moment they're at school right through until they enter the workplace. So I also think that we need to change the narrative that we are, you know, looking at to see how it becomes more inclusive. So when women design, that we don't just design it, but that we challenge how we design.
I want to go back to something you said a moment ago about almost like that there's a leaky pipeline between school, university, and eventually getting through to work. Earlier this year, I read a truly shocking statistic that said that in terms of youth unemployment for young women, girls, we're sitting at nearly 50%. And I don't even have words at how devastated I am about a figure like that and how we could ever overcome it. But I wondered, in terms of formal programs or things that our listeners who may currently be without a job can do, or access some type of resource where they can take part in the technology revolution and also benefit from it financially.
So yes, I mean, those are scary, scary numbers when we hear that. And it is something that we encounter frequently. So that's why I say we need to change that narrative to speak to our young women. I don't want to say our girls, our young women, and instill the confidence in them that there is a way forward for them. And mentorship becomes so, so important. You know, we have all these wonderful programs, outreach programs and scholarships and things like that. But until we do away with specific quota systems or preconceived ideas about who should be selected to participate in this, all of those good programs are not going to actually enhance employability of our young women. So we need to revisit the narrative there and go right back to early childhood development, so that from the moment that young girls enter into the education system, into the schooling system, they enter with a mindset that says, I can do this. I don't need to be a boy or a man to enter into this field. I have an equal opportunity. There's nothing that says that I may not do this kind of study direction, this kind of narrative. So until we change that mindset, we're going to sit with this 50% unemployability, you know, of our women. And it's not something that's unique to South Africa. It's continent-wide. So there's a lot of work happening at grassroots level, at NGO level, at educational institutions, but sadly not much or not enough yet at early childhood development stages.
So it's going back right to the beginning, that foundational level, which we hear quite often, especially with the psychologists that have been on the show. It is so instrumental as a platform to move forwards in life.
Yes, absolutely. That's where you shape the thoughts, that's where you shape the thinking and the mindset and moving forward. So, yeah.
So with a future view, what would your vision be for African women in science, and what type of legacy do you hope to leave for the next generation of researchers and, importantly, change makers?
So, yeah, I think my vision for women in science is that we should no longer see ourselves as an exception, but as an essential part of science. I want to see that the next generation of women will walk into laboratories, innovation labs, boardrooms without feeling the need to explain themselves or to prove why they need to be there. I see a future where women lead research that not only advances science, but also transforms communities, because women have the power to transform. We know that. We see it every single day. So whether we shape health or artificial intelligence, data ethics, I want to see women define what excellence looks like. But I think to me, also more importantly, even part of the vision also means that we need to measure success. Now, of course, what is success? Success, it also depends on who's asking. Now, for me, success equals impact. It's not about how many titles, how many certificates, how many awards, or anything like that. It's about the impact. So, if you were to ask me what kind of legacy would I want to leave, it would be one of hope and one of the possibility. Hope and possibility to dream and to be able to know that you, as a young woman, as a scientist, can have an impact. If I can achieve that, and if I just have one person believing that, then that will be good enough.
Fantastic words. I love that. I'm thinking about success in terms of the impact that you have. What are you doing to make a difference in this world? As we're coming towards the end of the show, one question that I ask all my guests who have made tremendous achievements in their respective fields is about some of the factors that contribute to their success. And what I love about this question is that everybody has a different recipe. So if you could please share some of your key drivers.
When I think back, over time and over the number of years, and I'll rather not say how long, because that may be a bit, giving away certain things. I suppose the things that drive me would be discipline, compassion, resilience, but also purpose. I cannot imagine a day waking up and not having a purpose to wake up for. I grew up in a world where it was not necessarily a privileged with easy access world. I grew up in a time and a place where opportunity was limited. And especially for women who wanted to pursue technology or science, that was an unheard of time in those days. But I had people in those days who really believed in me, teachers who saw the potential, and when I doubted myself, and they encouraged me, family that taught me the value of education, integrity, and purpose. To do something with purpose. So for me, one of the most important things is to wake up every day and think, okay, today this is what I want to achieve. And when you close off that day, to look back and to think, okay, yes, I actually did X, Y, and Z that will, in time to come, make a difference. And the day that I cannot do that, then I think then I need to stop doing what I'm doing, because then I would be doing a disservice to society.
With everything that you're doing, I don't think that day is going to come soon.
I can't imagine myself ever retiring, I have to tell you that.
And lastly, as we close out today's conversation, please share a few words of inspiration or motivation you'd like to pass on to girls and women who are listening to us.
So I want to say to every young girl and young woman listening today that know that you already have everything you need inside of you to make a difference. I always say, don't wait for the moment, create the moment. Don't wait for opportunity to knock on the door. You create the opportunity. Remember that technology and science are not just about machines and data, they're about people. So use the knowledge that you have to make the world kinder, smarter, and more just. So my message would be to say, as a woman, as a young girl, stand tall, stay curious, and never underestimate the power of your own light as a woman.
What a fantastic message. Thank you so much for joining us. I wish we had more time. I have so many more questions that I wanted to ask you.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Professor Darrell van Groenen, who leads the Center for Community Technologies at Nelson Mandela University.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.